Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Leftovers Podcast with Derek Kramer.
I'm going to say a stupid thing right now. Pudding. Where's my money?
Frank R. Curry.
I didn't say run through a wall. Do it again? Okay.
And Kyle Powell.
When the Sabres were actually in a playoff spot for the entire year.
On WGR550.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
Kyle Powell.
And today we are joined by one of the more recognizable names of our station. He is the Sabres in-game host, pre-game host, post-game host. He's also the host of Tee to Green. He is everyone's friend. It's Brian Koziel. Brian, what's up, man?
Gentlemen, thanks for the invite.
Thanks for coming along. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to even pop down here, no less, you know. You see, that's the kind of thing with a guy like Brian, is that he'll even take the time to come into the studio, you know, instead of having to fetch someone on the phone or something like that. That's why Brian's one of those more wholesome people that you'll ever meet.
Thank you, Derek. What an introduction. You're putting the pressure on me.
I mean, first
listen, you take care of me every week on Tee to Green, so
first off,
I was excited to come and to help you guys out today with hopefully some good. Talking points.
Now, here's the good news. The pressure is completely off because now you're on the Leftovers Podcast, which means that the bar is genuinely lowered. So that's the good news. Don't worry about pressure. We've got this now. And we've got Brian here for a couple of reasons. I mean, one mainly is that I don't know much about golf, and I don't need Frank trying to carry an entire conversation here while Kyle tries to ask questions about these sorts of things. Kyle's got a sheet in front of him. I don't know what this is. And
there was a lot to talk about from baseball on Friday night.
Yes, there is, especially from Friday night. You know what? Let's actually start with that. I mean, Brian, you brought it up a little bit on Tee to Green back on Saturday with you know, the Angels and the incredible evening that was in honor of Tyler Skaggs, and that was one of the more fantastic things you'll see in all sports.
No doubt. I mean, to try to compare it to anything else, like it's. Nothing's ever like that has happened before. Beyond the fact, yes, I mean, there's been, you know, unfortunate passings for young athletes at ages that obviously, you know, we're not accustomed to seeing people die at. But for the Angels to come together the way they did and have such a tremendous ceremony and then follow that up with the performance on the field, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, the fact, if you look at the math on how often not only a no-hitter but a combined no-hitter happens, the odds on that falling on that night are, I mean, legitimately once in a lifetime. And the fact that it happened on the night that they were honoring him, the mother throws out the first pitch, and then they all rally together to essentially play as perfect of a game as they possibly could, yeah. Kyle. I mean, that was just tremendous.
The parallels in this game were insane. Have you guys seen the list of all the weird occurrences that happened that night?
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers. Like numbers that lined up with some of Skaggs's.
Love me some numbers.
First off, peak baseball for that sort of thing to even happen as well, like the numbers continuing to pile in on this sort of thing. And I mean, we know baseball, it's a numbers sort of thing.
It was the first Angels no-hitter at all since Jared Weaver 7 years ago in May. I tried to see if Tyler Skaggs was pitching that night. He hadn't made his debut yet for the Diamondbacks, so that was over 7 years ago since they've seen it. He did that against the Twins. Yes, you mentioned it. Mother Debbie tosses a very emotional first pitch. Mike Trout in the first inning, it's a 454 foot home run. Tyler Skaggs were number 45. Put that in front, reverse it in back, 4-5-4.
Yeah.
First pitch he sees, and then it just kept going on from there. That was the 11th no-hitter in Angels history on Friday night. Tyler Skaggs were number 11 in high school.
Yeah, it's almost creepy how some of these numbers end up collaborating on a night like this. You know, it's great honor that these things, like these numbers really did connect this way, but part of it, I'm like a little weirded out. I'm like,
oh, it gets weirder.
Oh, I know.
The last Angels combined no-hitter, July 13th, 1991, Tyler Skaggs was born. The Angels scored 7 runs in the first inning, 13 total runs, July 13th.
Yeah, it gets wacky with these numbers, and it's
and
fantastic.
Theoretically, with the time change, that happening in L.A., but on the East Coast, this no-hitter ended on July 13th. It was the night before his birthday, But with the time change on the East Coast, this happened around 1 o'clock in the morning. That's July 13th. Tyler Skaggs would have turned 28.
The only way these numbers could have been stepped up is if the Angels came back home on July 13th, the day of his birthday, and did all of this.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah. That's the only way that that could have been stepped up to another level.
It's really amazing, too, because if you think about just the humanistic side of losing a friend, a teammate, mm-hmm. a coworker, however you'd play it out, and then, you know, the day that they really ask you to go back to work. Now, I know that they had played some road games, but at home, I mean, this was the night that they were maybe trying to put some closure to it or try to honor it in it at its peak. And had the Angels kind of gotten whacked that night, or they looked like they were distracted, it would have been totally understandable. And in fact, they went the other way with it. They actually like used it as motivation, I assume, throughout to stay as focused as possible in trying to honor him. So, you know, that piece of it, I think is pretty tremendous. It shows, like, I'm guessing we love to debate on our station, how momentum has an impact on a game or on a feeling. For those that argue for momentum, that probably had to be a night that you could feel it in that dugout. Guys, something special's here. Let's just keep it rolling. Maybe something wasn't even said. Maybe it didn't even have to be said. Like, just, you know, we don't say about mentioning, about, you don't say the word no hitter or whatever. I mean, everybody in that dugout played, obviously, one of their best games ever, too, to honor their teammates. So I love that piece of it, too. It would have been totally understandable for them to lay an egg on that night or some of the guys to look like they were distracted. And in fact, they took a total 180 and then went the other way with it and performed a gem. It's a memory that I'll never forget every time I even think about Tyler Skaggs or what the Angels did on that night.
It brought to mind the way the Marlins performed their first game after
I was
Jose
just
Fernandez's
about to bring that up, too.
In 2016.
Yeah.
That was rocking.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where you guys were. I happened to be in Florida when I got that news, visiting a broadcaster for the Tampa Bay Rays, waking up that Sunday and hearing mm-hmm. that news and just being completely distraught.
Yeah.
But to follow that story and then to see the way that the Marlins game started, their first game after a two-day layoff was at home. They
D.
did the
Gordon
same exact
blasting
thing.
Blasting a home run.
Wearing Jose Fernandez's name on their back and his number 16. D. Gordon going up to the plate, emulating Jose Fernandez's batting stance from the right-hand side. 2-0 count, first homer of the year, second deck. The laying of the jerseys on the mound after the game. Just emotional stuff. It's amazing. Baseball, the higher powers of the baseball guys, they work in mysterious ways, and some of this stuff is just amazing. What these guys can do under those circumstances, just a rallying cry.
Well, to tie it into something, maybe that the only thing close that I would say that in person that if I could make a comparison to is something that we actually honored last year at the Sabres in February when they had the 3407 crash 10-year yes. anniversary, mm-hmm. and we spent that night on the broadcast reflecting about that next Sabres game that few days later when the Sabres were at home and they played the Sharks and they ended up coming out and just coming out with a total bunch of emotion and playing so strong, letting it slip away, yep. then tying it late and then winning it in overtime. They come back to win 6-5 mm-hmm. on that night when the community was looking for something to try to maybe, you know, give themselves something to feel good about after what had been a couple of very, very obviously emotionally tragic days. So I feel like in person, in a venue, if I'm trying to think of something locally that maybe we can tie it to, you know, a scene where obviously life is involved much more so than sports. And, I feel like I remember us in February, Derek, when we were on the broadcast talking about that quite a bit. I mean, what a night it was at that time, the arena, you know, when the Sabres were able to somehow play a magical game. And it was a cool moment I know I'll never forget from being in that building for that.
Yeah, it's strange to see, you know, that sort of thing. And those are the moments, though, where you can see sports kind of transcend what it actually means and actually be able to really help connect a community, a fan base, and just bring everyone together and stop the constant, you know, I'll say it, bitching between literally everyone on the planet. And, you know, that's where sports can really do its unifying power and really bring everyone together to witness something like that. I mean, you could appreciate what happened for the Angels all the way over here in New York State. And literally across the country to see what happened. And hey, that's amazing to see that. I mean, one of my friends, he was watching it on MLB TV and they thought, hey, Braves Padres, that's the game you want to watch right now. And no,
it's
not. But Again, it's one of those things, though, where you can see that this is where sports can be one of those truly captivating things. And, you know, it was amazing to see that, you know, on that day that they're honoring Tyus Gags, that the Angels, like you said, Brian, they could have laid an egg and everyone would have easily forgiven them for that.
Yeah.
Instead, they go complete about face on it and give probably one of the more dominant games they've probably played all year.
Yeah.
So that's one of those awesome things that you like to see in sports. And then there's always things in sports, like how I mentioned the constant bitching thing. Yes, this is me trying to move on, and I'm not doing a great job at it. But, you know, the Sabres tend to cause a lot of complaints, we'll call it, these days. I've kind of liked their offseason. Relatively quiet, still making some moves, stockpiling on one certain position in particular. But now there's only one question that remains. There is a big move out there. What the hell is it going to be? And that's just turning into, we're waiting. We don't know what it is. We don't know when it's going to happen. But it's coming between now and training camp.
You'd hope. You'd think there is.
I don't see them carrying 12 defensemen, right?
The numbers on the roster would tell you that there should be. Does it guarantee it? No, but I think there has to be. You know, we didn't expect the Jeff Skinner trade to come. It came later in the summer. It did.
It was a lazy day in August.
That was an amazing move for this team, and obviously it's paid off. And Jason Bottrell, you have to give him some credit, even though it kind of felt like we negotiated it for him out in public in terms of what he knew he was going to have to pay Jeff Skinner to get it done. Mm-hmm. But for him to pull off that trade when he did, that was unexpected. Now we're at the expectation that there will be a similar type deal involving players of his talent level, maybe. Not him specifically, but and the name, of course, Rasmus Ristolainen comes probably first there. But the depth that the Sabres have now at D, not necessarily of quality, but of quantity. And I think there's been some quantity improvement as well, quality improvement as well. But there's definitely quantity there, and he should take advantage of that and hopefully turn it around in the fact that looking at your forwards and seeing that it still lacks quality scoring touch in terms of depth. And they've done a minor tinkering here or there, you know, Johansson coming in. But beyond that, like, there's nothing else to me that says I'm getting scoring beyond my top line or my top three players of Eichel, Reinhardt, and Skinner. After that, I feel very, very much in the same way that I felt after last season, which is I have no guarantee that it's coming from anywhere. And to me, that's where he has to take advantage of the fact that he's made some good moves defensively. He's created enough depth there that now he can move one, two, or even three of them and go ahead and turn it into hopefully a big-time forward or multiple forwards that can start producing for this team offensively that they can count on. Because to me, yes, they made some signings of Larson and Gergensen, and it's easy to poke fun at them, and you do need fourth-line players. I would have liked different fourth-line players just for a change of scenery. Guys that maybe I feel like could have a higher ceiling, because I feel like these guys, you kind of know what their peak is, and it's not high. But nevertheless, for what Bottrell did good for himself and good for his team, I think he's got to take advantage of that and make that move, because they definitely need to improve their scoring, because if the Eichel line isn't producing, then they're probably losing the game.
I think to go off the Larson Gergensen signing, I'm not taking both of them re-signing as both of them are guaranteed to play next season. I'm not taking the signings as seriously, because you also re-signed CJ Smith to a two-year deal. You still have other guys who can come up and play, who are going to be playing for roster spots that they sign, like a Curtis Lazar. So, and Kyle Apostle's there too. And then obviously you have Victor Olofsson. You hope that he makes the roster as well. So there's going to be a lot of competition for this, for the bottom portion of the roster. And it may very well come to be that Larson or Gergensen or both could get moved because another guy just played better in training camp. And at least re-signing them means that, well, if you're going to send them to another team, you're only going to send them for two ways. You lose them off waivers, which is a risk you can take if you want to, or you trade them. and you get something back for him, where, you know, a lot of people at the start of the offseason were saying just they're RFAs, just don't qualify him and let him go to UFA. Well, then you're losing potential value. Now you have the opportunity to potentially get something back, and I think that's the thought process of Batra right now with that.
Yeah.
At least in the bottom portion of the roster, all based on, you know, what happens in camp and some competition.
Yeah, the contracts that they signed were very reasonable for what they produce. So, I mean, there's nothing to argue about there. It's more so just the argument of, is bringing them back for the sake of bringing them back? Like, does that, you know, is changing to bring a different name, a different Johan Larsson or a different Zemgus Girgensons from another team, does that make it better? Probably not either, but because of the fact that we feel like we've seen the potential of what we can get out of these players, that's why I think more so, at least in my opinion, I feel like the argument is, oh, let's just freshen it up and hope maybe somebody else can somehow produce a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that, like you said there, that couldn't say that either Girgensons or Larsson or any of these, we'd call them fringe bottom six guys, couldn't be involved in this trade that's upcoming, Derek, that you're mentioning about, that maybe still is yet to come, that many Sabre fans are hoping is going to be coming.
It's sitting there in the pits of my stomach. I'm sure, like, it's telling me that something's going to happen. I am neither a psychic nor am I that smart, but it's that neat feeling like something's going to happen. Like you said, the numbers are there that point to it. I'm generally an optimist on these sorts of things. Some may call that foolish, but it really just points to something's going to happen here. We're not done yet. And I remember sitting in the newsroom one day in August and, hey, holy crap, we got Jeff Skinner. What? And I think that was you.
I think I did
you
that.
You exclaimed that.
Yeah, it was like on a Saturday, I think.
No, it was a weekday. You were covering.
Okay. Yeah, and I think what happened was I was just... We were just, you know, chilling in the newsroom. I was just browsing Twitter. Next thing I know, I see the Sabres tweet out, we've acquired Jeff Skinner.
And then Joe comes running out into the newsroom and just says, did you see the return on this? So who knows what's going to happen. Just because it happened at the same timeline last year does not mean it's going to happen again on a random day in August.
Yeah.
But there's numbers there that say that they're not rocking 12 defensemen and six forwards coming into next season for opening night.
Ultimately, that has to be some sort of movement in terms of the positioning of these players. There's no doubt about it. Will it be a monster trade involving Rasmus Ristolainen? I know that's what fans want to see, but it doesn't mean that it has to. It could involve Jake McCabe. It could involve Zach Bogosian. It could involve some of these other guys. And it all depends on, too, the team that's maybe willing to deal with you is, what is their cap situation? Because all three of those players have different impacts. Are they willing to take on Bogosian's contract? Are they willing to maybe take McCabe? Or they feel like maybe Jake McCabe, for them, is a player they'd rather have. He's a guy that costs less. He's a guy that might be easier to re-sign. If you're a GM and you like Jake McCabe and you feel like I would like him long-term at some point on my roster, that could be a player that ultimately, you know, could be more attractive in a trade. Ristolainen still would, I would assume, give you the most, assuming that, you know, he's the major player in the deal. Obviously, you can sweeten the pot with draft picks and other prospects and things like that. The only, you know, the one thing, though, to me, any trade that's involved here for me with Jason Bottrell, to me, I think it has to be involving an immediate NHL top six forward. Mm-hmm. He cannot trade Rasmus Ristolainen. I don't care if he's getting like three number ones, which I know would seem like an incredible trade to do. But like for me, if I'm advising him, saying, Jason, those three players may not be here or may not be in the NHL by the time you are still the GM of this team. Like, I think he has to feel some pressure now. Okay, I've now made coaching hire number two. We've had two terrible seasons. I've made a coaching change. If this coach doesn't kind of get this team at least trending in the right direction to buy me some time, if we have another terrible season, there could be talk not only of me being out, but I mean if then all of a sudden your back's up against the wall saying the next bad move I make, I'm fired, if not already, or when Ralph Kruger gets fired, I'm going out the door with him. So ideally there could be trades out there, but for him thinking, yes, I could get first round draft picks for Ristolainen and I could get draft picks for some of these other players, but is that going to be ultimately in my best interest? I might not be here to make those selections. So that's why I think he's got to be thinking about, I've got to win now. And it's not a very good way to deal if you're a general manager, knowing like I've got to get a proven NHL player in return, because it gives you less flexibility when you're making a trade. But he's got to figure out a way to do it, because this team, regardless of whether or not he's had ownership of a lot of this, which he has not, they have missed the playoffs longer than any other team in the NHL. And we've talked about that forever with the Bills. Like when Sean McDermott came in and Brandon Bean came in, you know, they were definitely with the, you know, well, this is our year one, and this is our year one, essentially deflecting the fact that they had missed the playoffs for what was close
they
to going
made
in
it
on
very
two,
public knowledge that they didn't care.
Right. 2 decades, and that they were going to do it the right way. And then miraculously, they somehow snuck in and got a playoff berth, and it all worked out in that sense. But, I mean, think about it. Had that not worked out,
the pressure on McDermott
and Bean, would be higher at this point.
So
because
much higher. Oh my God.
The drought now would be closing in on almost 2 decades.
Yeah. Oh, I just.
But
can't.
For hockey, ugh. It's to me, I think it's close. You're closing in on a decade in a sport where half the teams in a conference make the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
where there's so much turmoil and there's so much up and down every year with a roster. And we've seen these, I mean, look at the Blues. They were in last. We all know the story. Then they go and win the cup. Like, it's not as difficult to turn around a roster to me. We've seen with other teams in the NHL than it is in the NFL. It's just, I think it can happen quicker. I mean, we know in the NBA it can happen like this, a signing or one trade, one sign, and you can go from a team out of the playoffs to an NBA Finals contender just like that. And
you can
the Clippers did it. You know what I mean? So, like, it's not as easy as maybe the NBA, but I definitely think it's easier than the NFL. So the fact that the Sabres' playoff drought streak is getting close to approaching a decade, I feel like it's comparable to what the Bills were at before they ended up making
the
playoffs.
Yeah, in the NBA, you can go from having two MVP candidates to Damian Lillard literally killed your team.
Right. I mean, especially in the AFC East, it's harder to make the playoffs. Essentially, for now, you're playing for a wild card, which means there's two wild cards in the entire conference. And when you start to look at some of the other quality teams, like, that's tough. And you could apply that to the Sabres, too. The Sabres are getting better. And I think their roster does look a little better than it did at the end of this past regular season. Are they better than Tampa? No. Boston? No. Toronto? No. And those are clear cut. Washington? No. Clear cut. I mean, the Islanders lost a few. I think they're still better. The Rangers made some moves to get better. The Devils, who were below the Sabres, I think right now on paper look better. Pittsburgh still has Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. Like, they're probably better. Florida had made a coaching change. They're expecting to be better. They've signed a goaltender. They think that's going to help them out with Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, okay, where do the Sabres fit in? Other than Ottawa and Detroit, tell me teams in the East that you're sure Buffalo is going to finish ahead of. And I don't know if I can go much farther than those two.
Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, well then, immediate hockey trade fix. If you're trying to do win now, but a little bit of stability down the road. If you're talking Rasmus Ristolainen as the big fish, you know you have the surplus of defensemen. He's been a talk of the offseason. Does a trade partner for you in your mind start and end with a team like Winnipeg? Are you willing to branch out? That seems like a match made in heaven. They have a couple of RFAs they need to sign on the forward line. They've lost 3 pieces of their defensive core in Myers. I'm blanking.
Truba.
And I believe Ben Chiarot is in Montreal. Yeah.
Truba went to the Rangers.
What about a guy like Nikolai Ehlers for you, who's making around $6 million? I know the salaries are similar between Ristolainen and Ehlers. They've saved a little bit of money taking on Ristolainen. They would fortify their defense. It would give them a little bit of money. You could offset a bit. It's a hockey trade and then some for me in my eyes. I wonder if you think the same. But that seems like a match made in heaven. You'd help out 2 pieces. They've lost half of their starting defensive core from last season, and they're in a place of need where they need to sign some forwards. I think for the right price, that could be a player who's still 23 years old, controllable for the next 4 or 5 seasons, that could help you now benefit the Jets because they have RFAs who are younger than Ehlers, who they'd like to still build around, but they're in a tough situation, and I think it could be a trade with the right pieces involved that could benefit both sides.
I agree. I think it's about as perfect of a trade that is a player for player, which rarely so often happens in the NHL.
Right.
It's always proven player for prospects or proven player for draft picks or player with contract that the team's trying to get rid of. But it's never really, like you said, an equal talent for equal talent sort of level at the quality of level that these guys are at. I mean, I would say when Ristolainen is at his best,
you could argue he's fringe all-star level. And I think Ehlers, with when he's producing the numbers that maybe he did to get that contract that he is also at the same level too. Now, they've both had disappointing years, probably for Ehlers since he's been a full-time NHLer, his worst season. And for Ristolainen, the second half of the year might have been his worst time as a Buffalo Sabre. So would a change of scenery work for both of them to be changed? And the contracts, as you said, I mean, it's almost a perfect swap. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the GMs that always have to worry about the salary cap just as much as they do maybe the quality of the player or the trade, it seems to work out. And you're not – it's even the, you know, the other trade cliches that always go out there of like, well, are you trading him to somebody in your division or a contender? Like, Winnipeg has no impact on what Buffalo does. So it seems like that's the match that would make the most sense. And to me, Ehlers' upside and his youth and the style of game that he plays would fit well, I think, with what the Sabres are trying to do. So I'd be all for it. I don't know if the Jets feel that that's a straight one-for-one trade. Maybe the Jets are trying, because they have a little more salary cap issues than the Sabres do. Maybe there's another player in there that they would like to unload, like the Blues did in sending Berglund and Sobotka here. You hope at the very least, if you're going to get a player back with some salary dump, that they can contribute more than those two players did.
Probably like a Matthew Perreault. That's been the name.
That's the first guy that comes to mind.
Sure.
Tied into that. So one of the players that a lot of people were hoping could be a tie into one of these sorts of things, and one of the last picks of the Tim Murray era, let's be real, anyone could have taken Eichel and Reinhardt, Alex Nylander. He's gone for Henry Yokiharu, who is, from a lot of things that I'm reading from Chicago reporters at least, seems to have some promise there on the blue line. But for me, the biggest story of that trade is I feel like Boschwell probably got more in terms of trade value out of Alex Nylander than a lot of us thought he could.
Absolutely. I didn't think Nylander would land you much at all, and you're getting a guy that's already played in the NHL on defense.
Double the games that Nylander has played, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to read into Nylander's situation in the fact that I didn't get to see him play every single game for Rochester, but for those that did, they said that he was definitely the Jekyll and Hyde, up and down. And even we're hearing his off-the-ice sort of approach to his profession was in that same mentality, that sometimes he felt all in, sometimes you were questioning whether he was all in or not. Mm-hmm. The fact that he didn't show up for development camp, you know, I don't know how much pressure Jason Botterill and the Sabres brass put on him to show up. If I was him, I would have been there, because, boy, I mean, you weren't even guaranteed a spot this year on the roster. So
I mean, maybe they had the deal kind of in works and they told him not to go to dev camp. Like, yeah. We don't know the story on that.
That's true. That could have been a situation. And then he ends up showing up to Hawks.
It's like, for the love of God, don't get hurt here, kid. Right. We're working on a trade here. So maybe that could have happened. Because, I mean, the last couple of years in the offseason, it's been a bringer of woe for Alex Nylander heading toward training camp or training camp in itself. It's been, well, he's hurt. He can't start the year with us. What the hell?
Yeah,
and that's one of those things, though. But now it just, Victor Olofsson aside at this point, that's probably the last draft piece, the last notable draft piece of the Tim Murray era, right there.
Yeah,
like, you want to talk about how Brandon Beane eschewed all of the past regime? Jason Botchel's doing pretty much the same thing here.
Yeah, you've got Asplund, who's been,
he's still
somebody that maybe we don't have a good grasp on yet of whether or not there's going to be an NHL future or not there.
I think he might. If injuries happen, which they will,
yeah.
You know, I could see Asplund getting some games this year. I think he's at least another year and a half away. At least that's what I've been talking with Brayton about, since Brayton does what you do for the Amherst. Yeah. That's kind of what he's kind of been grasping at, that he still needs about another year.
Yeah, and that's, you know, after that, in terms of high pick forwards, that's, you're right, that's about it in terms of,
until some of the other draft picks start coming in.
Right. That Botterill's been,
yeah,
that now he's a charge of.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, we've got plenty of time to talk about the Sabres. There's a couple of months, you know. There's the rest of this.
We've got a whole other month.
And the Bills will provide a welcome distraction, I think, from the misery of it, or Sabres Twitter talking about Sabres Twitter. Who knows? But let's get into another reason that we brought you here. I mean, I'm rocking the hat for the tee to green.
Good job. Looking good.
You know, looking good, feeling good here. I would never be able to play good on the golf course, though. That's the one thing. Shut up, Frank. But the Open is this weekend. And, I mean, hey, let's see what we got here. But any rumblings that you're seeing, like, when it comes to a favorite that you would like to really try to champion for here for the Open?
Well, I'll say the person that's getting the most attention is Rory McIlroy. And I'm not saying that I think he's going to win, but the event being where it is and the fact that McIlroy has been still having a good year, he probably will be the headliner going in, even though Brooks Koepka should be again. And
is he the safe bet again here?
I think he'll contend. I think he hasn't won an Open championship yet, so I mean that's a possible. I mean, I'm sure he wants to get all the majors.
Win all the majors.
What else is he? He wants to win them all. There's no doubt about it. But I mean, he's up to four now. He almost had his fifth. I mean, Gary Woodland playing the round of his life is what maybe we would be talking about him having five already for Koepka. But yeah. I still think McIlroy will draw the headlines. He's the betting favorite. I think the UK is helping that in terms of the global betting on this event. But the Open is in Ireland for the first time at this course since 1951. Wow. So it's always either in England or in Scotland. So this year they're having it in Ireland, which I think is pretty exciting. And they haven't played it since 1951. And an older golfer, Darren Clark, an Irishman, is going to actually hit. He's in the first group. He's going to hit the first tee shot. They just announced that today to kind of have a little history tie in there too. But because McIlroy knows the course, because it's close to his hometown, I mean, the pressure that's going to be on him to perform and win, I think, is going to be at the most. So in terms of the coverage, of course, people are going to talk about Tiger and Brooks Koepka, but I think McIlroy's the story this week. Can he figure out a way to perform and have a chance to win another major? He's had a major drought. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he got off to a super, super start as a real youngster, and we were talking about him being the next Tiger in terms of the performances in majors, and he's cooled down since. I mean, since I think the 2015 PGA?
I think that's his last major.
Right? Yeah. So it's been, I mean, we're pushing four years?
Yeah.
Four full years with McIlroy. But the course, from what I've seen, looks really cool. It's right next to the Irish Sea, which means we'll always have weather involved. And, you know, a reminder to everybody, it'll be on when you wake up at 2 a.m., I think is about 1 a.m., actually, I think is between 1 and 2 a.m. is when the tee times are going to start, at least on Thursday and Friday. The TV coverage for this is excellent. You actually can watch every single shot. Between Golf Channel and NBC, they actually are televising it from the first tee shot to the end. So unlike some of the other majors where maybe it's a little less, I mean, the Masters is the one that has the limited TV coverage, but if you either stay up late or wake up early, the Open will be on, and I'm sure they'll be showing some cool shots of Ireland and things like that, which I always enjoy about the broadcast anyway, seeing the town, seeing the shots of the pubs, seeing the shots of some of the, you know, the, you get a little history involved, but the fact that it's there in Ireland, I think will be pretty neat for the week. But other guys, Tiger hasn't played since the U.S. Open, and Tiger's calendar this year has been interesting. He's only played the majors since the Masters. He played the Masters and won, took all the time off in between, played the U.S. Open, did okay. I think he finished in the 20s at Pebble Beach, and then took all the time off in between here and is now showing up for the Open. His back, the spinal fusion surgery, like he says, I was told I just cannot push it. And he's, with his world ranking now and his points that he's accumulated, I'm sure his plan is that he wants to play in all the playoff events coming up and things like that, so, which is consecutive weeks. So I think that's probably part of his preparation. I don't know if it's going to mean he's going to play his best. I still think you'd want one event in between to play your best. But, I mean, I'm not a Tiger Woods' doctor, so I can't advise him in terms of what to do. Golf-wise, I would think he would need at least... And he's never played this course. A lot of the USA PGA Tour players probably have not played this course ever. Some of them are seeing it for the first time this week, including Phil Mickelson, including Tiger Woods, including some of these guys like Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson,
DJ.
I mean, these guys have not. There hasn't been a competitive event that they would allow them to play in this. So unless they've, you know, gone over in the last year knowing that the event was going to be here to just play, which probably they haven't. You know, a lot of these guys are seeing this for the first time this week. So another reason why McIlroy is drawing more attention, because he's very familiar with the course.
It makes me wonder if there's any other guys who have yet to break through, especially on the European side for the majors, if they can put on a show and kind of contend too. I know two guys immediately come to mind are Tommy Fleetwood and Jon Rahm.
Yep. No, I like Rahm won last week at the Irish Open on the European Tour. So he's seeming to be obviously playing well if he's able to go and win a tournament. And Fleetwood has had a tremendous 2 to 3 year stretch here. So I like both those names. And neither of them have won a major yet. So
yeah,
they're both talented enough to do it. And I wouldn't put Molinari at all to bed in terms of this discussion of Europeans that maybe have the talent to do it. He could do, I mean, other guys that have won majors, Justin Rose, we know, had, I think, an incredible performance at the U.S. Open. He couldn't hit any fairways. He looked like he couldn't hit any greens, but he was getting up and down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, tremendous scrambler to keep him in that hunt at Pebble Beach at the U.S. Open. So he's a guy that obviously can always play well, too. But
Sergio. Henrik Stenson. Yeah,
Stenson's quietly having a really good second half of the year, and he plays this tournament very well. And if weather's involved, you need more creativity. Stenson's a guy that can really hit that low shot. That's kind of one of his trademark shots, low and accurate. So he could be a guy that is playing well too. Yeah, it's the most open field in terms of it being global because of this event and the familiarity that some guys have with the course and some guys don't. So that's why I feel like this one is a little more. It's got a little more different possible storylines. It can veer in different directions, but. Yeah, it should be fun. I like watching it first thing in the morning. You can wake up and watch it and turn it on. Golf itself right now, I feel like, is in a good spot in the sense that you've got, in the summer, people want to, at least for us here in the U.S., it's like to sit inside and watch it when it's gorgeous outside in Buffalo. Like, that's tough to do. But if it's on from, 3, 4 in the morning until noon, and then it's over and you got the rest of the day, like, it, I feel like it's more apt to be enjoyable for kind of like Wimbledon, like to sit there and watch that tennis match. Well, when it's on at 9 a.m., it's a little easier to do that when maybe at 4 in the afternoon, people maybe don't want to, at least here, we don't want to sit inside.
There's only like 48 sports. Good days in
Correct.
Buffalo.
So that part I like about it too. And the fact that they had the U.S. Open on the West Coast and you got to see it at night, you're sitting there at 10 at night watching the final holes. Like, I think that's cool too. So I think the more golf puts their majors either in prime time or super early in the morning, which you will have with the British Open, obviously, every year, then
yep.
I think that's going to lend itself to people kind of getting more excited to take it in and watch it.
And I'm not just your producer, but I'm also going to be your promoter here because, on Saturday, if you're up early watching the Open, you can take in some tee to green.
That's right.
2 hours.
2 hours this
on
week.
On Saturday.
Yep, we do 2 hours for majors, and we're actually trying to go.
Yeah, Kyle, that's right. It's 2 hours this week. So
it's 2 hours.
Have fun with that.
Are you in? Is Kyle in this?
Kyle's going to be in for that one.
Oh, look, he perked up. He's like,
he's like, hang on, 2 hours, what?
That's right.
All right, Kyle, hours.
He's smiling, so he's ready for it.
Yeah, he's ready for it. I mean, but again.
We are actually, we're traveling a little farther for normally than what we do for TD Green. We're going to Bradford, Pennsylvania for the show.
See, you live around the corner from the studio, so you're not going to be waking up nearly as early as these guys are.
That's right.
So it's not as bad.
Yes. There's a really big tournament for the Western New York PGA Pros there on Monday and Tuesday. So we're there to help talk a little bit about that. But we'll be spending the majority of the 2 hours talking about the Open Championship, which will be going on, as you said, at that time. So you can get up and have your morning coffee and listen to the show and put on the TV and watch a little golf, too, while you're listening to it.
There you go.
Derek, it won't be the same this week without you there.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I will make sure that Kyle has all of the dope beats ready for you guys, for Jeff in particular, for his listening pleasure, and for the listeners as well. So one last thing that I'll let you plug on here with the Duster Challenge coming up as well.
That's right. Thank you. So our show, Tee to Green, does a putting contest. It's a contest, but it's really just a fun night at Fox Valley Club in Lancaster. It's open to anybody. You don't
so
have to
Frank
be.
Frank can do it.
Anybody can do it. You don't have to be a golfer. You don't have to be good at golf.
So even Derek can do it.
Anybody can do it.
Well, that was a quick revenge plot right there.
For those that have never been to Fox Valley Club,
there's a really, really big putting green, and we set up like an 18-hole course. Essentially, like you would think about it, putt-putt, you know, like mm-hmm. there's 18 holes, except it's just not a real putting green.
I'm not terrible at putt-putt.
So, well, there's no clowns, and there's no little rails.
I'm all about no clowns. You don't,
but there's no rails either to keep the ball in, so you got it's like, it's not bumper bowl here.
I might Scott Nord some of these
But
things.
Anyway, we set up an 18-hole course, and we usually get somewhere around 50 people to do it. Mm-hmm. And the proceeds go to the Western York PGA Reach Foundation, which is for military veterans. And what that does, for those of you that don't know, is it provides golf opportunities for veterans that either are disabled, maybe providing them with some sort of adjusted equipment or riding carts, things like that, so that they can play. It also provides them maybe with an introduction to the game to give them some sort of sense for those that are struggling with getting back to kind of normal life and things like that. As we all know, you know, these veterans go to war, they come back, and sometimes it's a struggle to get back to enjoying life again. So one little outlet that the Western Europe PGA does is to try to provide them some sort of golf enjoyment in some way as a thanks to their service. So we're raising money for that. The last 2 years, we raised over $2,000. We're hoping to do it again. So it's Duster Challenge, Duster with a D. Duster, by the way, is a made-up fictional character that Kevin Sylvester made up. It's supposed to be this putting guru guy. It's like a cartoon character. So that's, I don't know where he came up with the name, but
it's
beautiful. Like it.
I was going to say, last time I heard Duster, Frank was yelling at me for not playing defense on Thursday.
That's right. But here's what's good about it, Derek. Beyond the fact of whether you putt great or putt terribly, it's your admission when you sign up at DusterChallenge.com, beyond the portion of it that goes to the donation, you're going to get dinner, unlimited beer, courtesy of our friends at Michelob Ultra. Thank
you.
We have a DJ, Jimmy, from Star 102. He comes and gives us great music all night. Lots of giveaways and prizes. And then after like the 50 people go around, we send them off in groups of two. They kind of go around. The Western Europe PGA is there to put your name in lights and make it feel really official. So they have their big electronic scoreboard like they would at a professional event. So you get to see your name and your score. And then they have a cut line. So we actually make a cut. The top 16 of the 50 go make the cut, and we finger quotes. And then we do little mini 9-hole matches. We do like 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, and so on.
Pretty cool.
And then we rent lights, we turn the lights on, so it gets, you know, it starts at 6. Usually the lights, we turn them on around 8. And then we have the playoff matches, and then we get it down to having, you know, who's there left at the end, and then
it's intense.
We give them an old hickory, old school putter that says Duster Challenge
nice.
Champion on it.
Very cool.
Like that. So
how'd you know I'm all about the show, Brian?
So
the showmanship.
Here's the worst thing that can happen, Derek. You can show up, you can putt terribly,
and be 50th out of 50.
You can be 50th out of 50th. You can see your name in lights where it says 50th place. You can see your name, but you can have dinner, as many beers as you want, and listen to music all night, and you can sit there and cheer on and mock the people as they're putting the rest
and
of the
hang life. Out with the gang.
And you get to hang out. Kevin and I talk, you know, throughout. And
Kevin talks. We know Kevin talks.
That's right. And Jeff kind of surveys to make sure everybody's following the rules. It's a really good time. It's fun. Some of our other vendors from TD Green and show partners are there to do some other giveaways and things like that. So it's a fun night. Yeah, if anybody's interested in doing it, DusterChallenge.com.
And possibly listen to Tita Green. There might be spots to give away.
We've been giving away spots. We'll be giving away another spot or two, I'm sure, this week on the show.
Brian, thanks for taking the time and coming in.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Good times. Appreciate it.
That was Brian Koziel, a good friend of ours, a good coworker, a good dude. And a lot of things going on with Brian there. And and Sabres season's not even in full swing. So, but thanks for Brian for coming along and joining us in studio here today.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
The rare in-studio guest. And it might actually be the first time we've had a guest in studio with the trio.
That would have
Frank and I have done that before.
That would mark the first time.
It would mark the first time that we had a trio and a guest. So there you go.
History.
History on the Leftovers podcast here today.
You thought it was just a normal July Monday.
Yes, no, it's not. It's historic. We're rearing to go here. And no, it's interesting though that we still managed to have enough things to talk about here throughout, despite the fact that, well, it is it's getting to be that downtime and we need training camp to get here fast. But over the weekend, guys, it's been a while actually since the three of us have even been in studio together, as a matter of fact, now that I think
over
about
a week.
It. Over a week. Frank, it's been almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think it's been 2 weeks.
4th of July, 11 day. You were
last
off on a Monday.
I wasn't here.
Like, right. The three of us together, it's not been very common lately. It's been and we've even had two Thursday shows scrapped because of the 4th of July, the power play.
Yeah.
Everything of the sort. So but yeah, no, Kyle talked to John and I after the GR shift for the 11 day. Dude, that second shift sucked.
Because this guy before the 11 day power play said, I've skated 4 hours last year and I feel like I would have done eight more.
Whew.
So three is going to be a breeze.
Three was a breeze. It was the other three that was the problem.
It was the other three.
It was the other three.
It was the other three in the morning.
Being that so close together. Because you have to remember, we had to be... Our other shift was at 6 a.m.
The very next morning. So
the very next morning. Like,
literally 12 hours after I was on the ice, I was back on the ice.
Yeah.
Derek texted me after the second shift, and his response was quoted as, if you had asked me how I was feeling and the WGR shift was second, my answer would have been non-FCC safe.
That sounds about right.
He's right. I did say that, and that was exactly how I was feeling. I mean, that was...
That we also hung out.
Not only were we
afterwards.
Booty sauce.
Yeah.
Our
gross.
Team was bad.
He played some goal, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he had his work.
Low scoring affair, I heard?
For one team.
Right.
For one team.
Frank did a good job.
I thought I played well.
Frank did a good job. We scored one goal in the first hour with this other team.
Can you do splits?
Eh.
I feel like the answer to that is
he
more
split,
of a yes
he split
or no.
Time. He split time for this shift.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, no, that one was. It was obviously still fun. It was a much worse result than I've been used to for the 11 day. I've been used to strictly winning with GR, and then this happened. And I will say, I love all my friends, but a lot of us are terrible at hockey, so that's the genuine part of it there. And now, though, there's this whole rumbling. I want to get your guys' take on this one with the NFL owners saying, hey, I've got this great idea for an 18-game season. You guys don't have to play all 18 games. You can play your normal 16 like usual. On a scale of 1 to Ronald McDonald, how stupid is this?
Can we go beyond Ronald McDonald?
Is the big purple guy higher or lower than Ronald McDonald? Is that his name?
Yes, Grimace.
Grimace?
Grimace.
I haven't been to a McDonald's since I was probably eligible for Happy Meals. And
good
I'm going
to
be honest.
It's great discipline, actually.
Yeah.
There's one right around the corner.
I drive right past that intersection every time I come to the station, and
same.
I just look at it. And
sometimes I have to go there for him.
Yeah.
He'll call me on a Saturday at like 11:15 and
say
be like,
for a TD Green and where I can't leave the building because they're doing a 2-hour show. You know, he got to stay dedicated to the cause. And I can't leave, so I get
and then
food.
He gets hungry and will call me and be like, help.
It's not even words at this point. It's help.
That's the code word.
Do you
word
need
for,
food? Yes.
That's the code word for get me food, please. So I just go to McDonald's and get them some nuggets.
Yes. I mean, first off, chicken nugs make the world go round.
I mean, yes.
And second, back to the original point here.
I think it would just be so difficult.
It's not even that it's so difficult. Think about this. This is how stupid this is. The part of the proposal was that quarterbacks, for example, would be
Exempt
from this.
I think also like the
but
kickers
you know,
and
but
kickers
you know
and,
who isn't exempt from this? The left tackle. You tell me that Josh Allen's going to be okay without Deion Dawkins on the left, and it's got to be someone that's a backup.
Yeah, the only exempt positions. There's four exempt positions: quarterbacks, kickers, punters, placeholders.
Yeah, but again, proposed limit. The left tackle's not exempt. Mm-hmm. The center's not exempt. Mitch Morse looks like he's going to be an integral part of this unit. Go ahead and tell me that he's not going to have parts of his offensive line, which offensive lines do better when they play together for the most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that was just this new staple. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, hang on. Like, Ramon Foster was the one that brought it up. And I'm like, good Lord, that's terrifying. He mentioned, like, the blind side, the right tackle. I'm like, yeah, that's actually kind of scary. But imagine not having your offensive line in bits and pieces for this.
Yeah, it would just be so...
It would decline the product of the game.
It would, because you'd have to look ahead to every schedule of the season. You'd have to anticipate when would be the best times to sit XYZ player, and we have a good matchup here. Can we get by without this guy? And not to mention, like, I also thought about this, too. That's two extra games for especially offensive players to set new records.
And the records for me isn't necessarily my
concern.
I know they're not held as high as a sport
like baseball, but there's still gripes around the league from when they changed from 154 games to 162, most notably the home run record that Roger Maris broke had eight extra games. Think of when the if this were to go through, like a record like the touchdown, 55. What if someone gets a 60? They had two extra games. That's going to be, are you going to put asterisks next to this? Like, it was just one of my thoughts. It's not integral to the actual proposal.
It's but definitely
like, from the fan side there. And whatnot, there's too many moving parts.
And then there's also...
You go to a Bills game and, oh my God, Josh Allen's not playing. Like, why did I buy this ticket? When are the inactives going to be announced now? Even fantasy purposes. It's kind of sad, but it's such a big...
Fantasy purposes is going to be huge.
It's sad, but it's huge. You're going to have to know a week in advance whether I'm going to have my quarterback.
Because now if you have a guy like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, he can only play 16 games. Now you can't play him for three weeks.
Exactly.
Out of the season, instead of one.
Just a lot.
Yeah, what happens if, like, for example, they're locking up a playoff spot toward the end of the year and they're thinking maybe we need, like, this is a good time now to sit them because we've got our backs against the wall now.
Yeah.
We have to sit them in these games. And you've got DeAndre Hopkins. You're trying to make a playoff spot, and guess who you don't
Whoops.
Have? Whoops. There's that Looney Tunes to it. And, again, the fact that you could buy a ticket and you want to see DeAndre Hopkins –
And he's not playing.
Like, would you scratch? Howard Simon brought it up this morning. Would you scratch your big names at home? No, you would probably want to do it on the road. And then say you're a Bills fan living in Philly, and you want to see Josh Allen, and you want to see LeSean McCoy, and you want to see everything else that's going on there. You want to see Tre'Davious White. He's a budding star as a cornerback. Nope. Nope. Scratch that game. What do you mean he scratched that game?
I think what concerns me more is it's two more games for players to get injured in.
It's not even that. Because if they're saying you still get to play your 16 games, blah, 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 blah. The big one that Ramon Foster put up on Twitter this morning, that was the huge thing for me. Josh Allen already was running for his damn life last year. You mean we have to guaranteed put him through that for two games again? Guaranteed? Like hell. No, I'm not doing that. Get the heck out of here with that. Kyler Murray would be crapping his pants right now to this proposal.
More so.
Because the Arizona line is already bad. You need backups to that trash line? Great. Are these guys D2 college kids or what? Everything about this is Looney Tunes. Get it the hell away from me. I don't want it. It's probably one of the dumbest things ever, all for the NFL to try to grab money. And I appreciate that they're just being honest about it at this point. But stupid idea is stupid idea.
Yeah.
Too bad it's not Thursday. Kyle is chuckling as he gets
That's right.
He gets it. You'll get it later.
No, I get it.
You'll get it later.
I get it.
You'll get it when you're older.
Only you can say that.
Shut up, Frank. But it's not the Dummy of the Week segment on this Monday. No. Instead, it is the three up and three down. We don't have it? Is all your numbers from that Tyler Skaggs thing?
I wanted to have this week be a focus on Skaggs.
All right.
That's fair.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Also,
I'm
you know what?
We talked about it earlier.
We've
too.
Been out of it for a while as well. So, I mean, maybe it's good that we're a little in flux.
Instead, we can talk about a jersey number change today in the NHL. Did you guys see this news?
In the NHL?
Yep. Pretty notable player has more than tripled his jersey number. Just saw it in passing. Thought it was interesting. Actually, I have a little game for you, too. A little mini game. It's not a game, but it's just like testing your memory. William Nylander. Changing his number from number 29 to number 88.
Why?
No idea. Just saw the headline on Twitter and ran with it.
Maybe he just wants to be his own player at this point because his father wore 92. He wore 29 because it was a flip of it.
His brother
wears 92. Maybe he kind of wants to just be William Nylander and not worry about his family as part of it at this point. Maybe he's just changing the number because he was butt last year.
That could be it as well.
Who knows? Maybe superstitions like, I was terrible last year, time for a jersey change. Could you imagine being that superstitious of like you have a bad year, then you change your jersey number, then you have a good year, but then you have another bad year, so you change your jersey number again?
The one interesting thing about it is, though, if I do remember correctly, and also reading this tweet and a bit of the first few paragraphs of what had transpired, I believe I read, though, that he is going to pay for the rebranding of anybody that has his number 29.
He did just get a nice contract, mm-hmm. So I guess that's very nice of him.
So in front of me as well, I went ahead and looked up a couple of famous number 88s, and I'd like to see if you guys can name them all.
I wonder if Patrick Kane's
are we
on
going,
this list.
Yeah, just the NHL?
Oh, yeah. I have five famous 88s in front of me. Well, five and a half. One of them is a...
What's the half? There's no halves.
Well, he's not 44? Really that famous. And you're probably not going to get it because he wore it for half a season last year after getting dealt from
the
Sabres.
Just tell us who this one is then.
Okay, fine.
Tell us who that one is.
Nate Beaulieu. Wore number 88 as a Winnipeg Jet.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Oh, that's right, he did.
All right,
Did he play in all the games for Winnipeg?
No.
Five famous number 88s in front of me. I'll give you this much. Four active. One is retired. And since...
The retired, I know.
The retired is pretty easy.
Yeah. It's Lindros.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got four active players, and then two who are active. At least one, I believe, is active. One might be a current free agent.
Does William Nylander count? Damn.
They were both former Buffalo Sabres. I want to test your jersey knowledge.
Oof.
Huh. So let's get it out of the way. You got six.
Okay. So Lindros was the retiree.
Mm-hmm.
Kane is obviously the top guy in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Bull used the half.
Two and a half down.
All right, good. So what, we got three, four?
Four.
Four.
Hmm.
You see, here's the problem. I'm definitely going to fail at this. This is bad radio time, guys. Here we go. It involves numbers.
See how well you paid attention.
I don't.
In class.
And all four of these guys are playing right now.
I'm sure of three of them.
Okay.
Brett Burns.
Yes.
Yeah, Brett Burns, yeah.
I got first blood. Let's go. Because everyone could get Kane.
So you got two left that are definitely active, and then two of which are former Buffalo Sabres that have played for Buffalo in the last five seasons. One played in 2014, wore number 88. One in 2016.
Jamie McGinn.
You're getting smoked.
Whoa, let's go.
Jamie McGinn wore number 88 for the Buffalo Sabres in 2016.
Yes.
I forgot he wore 88.
Well, now you remember.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that from Buffalo. Like, I just thought of Jamie, because you mentioned 2016. I'm like, Jamie McGinn.
Like, he was the first guy that came to mind, too.
That is the first name that comes to your mind when you think of the 2016.
When you said
Buffalo
former
Sabres.
For wearing a number in the 80s? Yeah, it was Jamie McGinn.
That I knew weren't Kane or O'Reilly? Yeah. I feel like that's kind of fair.
Okay, that's right.
Don't patronize me.
I'm not patronizing you.
I'm smoking Frank over here. Let's go.
I forgot I shortened the playing field by giving you his number. So
based on the current stipulations, I feel like that's not a bad thing to think of right away. Also because Jamie McGinn often wore eights.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint for one of the current players. You better make it a medium. I only have 2 minutes.
All right.
Hey, ref, check your voicemail. You missed some calls.
That terrible Dunkin' Donuts
that you
commercial.
Heard every time there was a commercial
break.
Yeah,
every time there's a commercial break in the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, David Pastrnak doesn't take penalties.
Yeah. Like, the commercial would be more accurate if it was Brad Marchand.
Exactly.
Really would have.
Really would have.
Blown opportunity. It would have been so much better.
Blown up.
Two more names.
Okay.
Two more names. Former Buffalo Sabre.
One of them played in 2014.
For the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
2014? Yes. I have to dig up a tanker?
Yes, yeah. You do.
Bleep.
Most recently, I can recall him playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning as of last year. Role player. Ironically, that is also the team for which the last remaining...
Hang on. It's Corey Conacher.
Frank, step up, my dog.
Tank Saber, Tampa Bay. He wore John Scott's helmet in the penalty box.
He did.
Corey Conacher. Was with Tampa originally, then to Ottawa for Ben Bishop in one of the worst trades that
I've
seen.
That's right.
Well, Conacher wasn't in the NHL last year. That's why I wasn't thinking of him right away.
And then...
But he wasn't. Yeah. But you're right. He was
but
with
he was
Tampa.
Tank Saber, yes.
Yeah, but he was with Tampa. But he wasn't with the. He wasn't on the team.
Yes, that's why he
was in the AHL.
That's why he wasn't a sure thing as a current NHLer. Put all the pieces together. I'm done. I quit. You got to do this last one by yourself. Go to hell.
All right. So we have Britt Burns, Patrick Kane, Eric.
Once
Lindros.
Again, you're asking also me to remember the tank teams.
Well, you don't have to anymore.
Now you're good.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Burns, Kane, Lindros, Sabres. Pasternak, Beaulieu for like 20 games, Conacher, Jamie McGinn. Final player here. Pressure's on you.
Yeah, and this is also the one who you don't think is active.
No, this one's definitely active.
He's definitely?
Yep.
Okay.
The one I wasn't sure was active was McGinn.
Oh, okay.
He was in Florida.
Okay.
Was he in Florida?
Yeah, I think he was in Florida. Well, what era are we talking?
Like, what era? He's right now.
No, he is playing now. Okay, that's I forgot.
You're already forgetting.
Yes.
Lindros,
it's
as
the
you recall, was the only one I was positive on that is not currently playing.
He's playing.
Yeah, I took care of the obscure one with Conacher.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
See, I don't remember player numbers. That's why I'm not, that's why I'm
that
bad
I also
at
haven't
this.
Gotten one wrong.
Atlantic Division.
That narrows it down.
Yeah.
I mean, it does.
It does.
Seven teams. It's not the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
Should I just brand
this which team had a notable first-round exit this year that screwed all of our Eastern Conference brackets up.
Okay, so Tampa.
There you go. I'll make it very easy for you.
Is it Vasilevsky?
Frank's on the board.
Look at that. Frank gets the goalie.
Did we get no wrong answers there?
We got no wrong answers.
I didn't think Vasilevsky wore 88. I thought he wore 80 for a sec. I don't know why.
I knew it wasn't Sergachev, for example.
No.
Because I knew Sergachev's it was 98. It looks close, but yeah, it's not.
I thought of Sergachev, too, but I didn't think
good
that
word.
Was
goalie
right.
Gets goalie.
Hey.
Look at that.
But I didn't think Vasilevsky wore
88 literally
as
left
well.
It to you for the most important part.
Sure.
See, I knew what I was doing. I was thinking about just spewing random names just to piss him off.
I would have been fine with that. Ended up being really good. Also,
we did it. Perfect run, Frank.
I learned something today.
And a good high five.
Did you guys know this? William Nylander's got a Jerome Iginla-like first name or full name.
What is it? William Iginla Nylander?
No, like it's, no, it's a really like long name.
Just long-winded. There's six parts to this name.
All right, let's see. Frank, let's try to put together the dumbest William Nylander name possible. You ready?
All right, I'm going to write this down.
William. All right, hang on. We're gonna play this as
remember,
a game.
Remember, he's Swedish, too.
No, I know. We're going to play this as a game. We're going to pass it back and forth.
Okay.
Okay?
Oh, my gosh.
So you're going to get first up because I'm going to say William.
Michael.
Johan.
Eric.
Forsbacka.
All right.
Nylander.
Carlson.
Well, you got three of the six.
Whoa!
Wait, what?
Let's go.
Right here.
Don't get ahead of yourselves.
It
two of them are William Nylander.
Oh. Okay, so we actually got one, which
we got one.
Which is even dumber. We got one out of the four.
You did.
Please tell me it's Johan.
It was Michael.
Yes.
It was his father's
name.
Yeah.
That's why I was hoping it was Johan, because that would be random as all hell.
Per multiple sources that are not his official birth certificate online, he currently rocks a name and has rocked the name of William Andrew Michael Jr. Nylander Altelius.
Okay, suddenly Forsbacka is not all that far-fetched, is it?
No, it's not.
I wonder if... Live radio. I'm seeing if Alex Nylander has a name like this.
Oh.
Good idea, actually. Ooh. But what was that last word? Artelius?
Altelius.
Altelius.
A-L-T-E-L-I-U-S.
But that was the last part of the name. It was after Nylander?
Correct.
So he is William can't
even say it. No, I think that's his mother's maiden last name.
So what, like kind of like a hyphen sort of thing? He's William Artelius.
No, I think they're like...
No, go to hell. He's William Artelius.
Well, no, I think
just
like
traded Alex, Alex Artelius.
Yeah. Well, no, I think the way it works in Sweden is like the actual, like the father's last name comes, goes
Could
first
you imagine
before
if
the mother's.
William has this six-part name and Alex only has like four?
Alex has nothing.
Just like his any joke.
Ooh.
I don't think he does. I think they just gave up. I don't think he has a middle name.
Man.
No wonder he's... He doesn't have any work ethic. He wasn't. There was no thought put into his name.
Oh,
all
boy.
I'm seeing is Alex Nylander Altelius. I don't think he was given a middle
See?
Name.
See, we traded an Altelius. We didn't even trade a Nylander. Suck on that, Chicago. And I think on that wonderful note, I think we should end it. Thank you.
That stinks. That really just...
Could you imagine your older brother gets all these names and then you just get...
That puts everything into perspective. It all makes sense
now. It really
does.
It really kind of makes sense now.
Except for the fact that he's going to Blackhawks development camp. Just had to throw that out there.
Wait, he is going to Black...
It was reported he's going to be...
This had to have been a Sabres thing then.
What's that?
Yeah.
Him not
showing
up to
Sabres camp?
Not to show up.
They probably told... Like, if he's going to Blackhawks dev camp now, like I feel like that's... Either he received a message... Which I doubt, or he received a different kind of message, which was, "Hey, we're in the works of dealing you, so you don't need to show up to dev camp."
Yeah, that makes more sense.
That probably makes more sense, but it doesn't make as much sense as his brother getting six part name and he doesn't.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Let's start a GoFundMe. Let's raise some money for the awareness.
All right. One of the names for him will be
petition.
Hang
a
on.
Petition
Hang
for
on.
Alex.
Guys,
Nylander
guys, guys. Here we go.
Officially
here
change.
We go. Here we go.
His birthing name.
We are going to help Alex Nylander get his new name right now. Kyle, start it off and kick it to me.
Devlin.
Alex Devlin Powell.
I was not expecting you to say that. Esquire.
Damn. Gave an Esquire.
Jeez.
Michael Nylander
Altelius.
Altelius. There we go. We did it. We didn't write this one down.
No.
I already forgot it. All I know is I threw the word Powell in there.
I'm honored, honestly.
Yeah, no, right? There it is. We'll sign a petition. Get Alex Nylander a new name.
So it wasn't his fault.
All right. I think this is a good way to end this right here. Creating names.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Leftovers podcast here on WGR550.com. I am Derek Richard Hitmon Lee Esquire Kramer.
Now we're giving ourselves names?
I mean, it's a bit at this point. Why not? Fine, let's do it normally here. Derek Kramer.
Brank R. Curry.
And Kyle Powell.
There you go.
And, noted name share of Alex Nylander.
Noted name share of Alex Nylander. Thanks to Brian Koziel dropping in studio with us. It was a lot of fun talking some hockey, baseball, and... the Open as well. Make sure to tune into Tee to Green on Saturday mornings all throughout the golf season here, throughout the summer. Jeff, Kevin, and Brian, they always do a good job providing even some tips for people that want to learn how to play better golf. So always be tuned to that. Thanks to Brian. And hey, training camp is on the way, fellas. Be ready for it. Maybe even do a show at 9:30. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Thanks for listening. Check you later.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
But it's not the Dummy of the Week segment this Monday. No. Instead, it is the three up and three down. We don't have it? Is all your numbers from that Tyler Skaggs thing?
I wanted to have this week be a focus on Skaggs.
All right. All right.
That's
all right.
Fair.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Also,
I'm
you know what?
We talked about it earlier.
We've been out of it for a while as well. So, I mean, maybe it's good that we're a little in flux.
Instead, we can talk about a jersey number change today in the NHL. Did you guys see this news?
In the NHL?
Yep. Pretty notable player has more than tripled his jersey number. Just saw it in passing. Thought it was interesting. Actually, I have a little game for you, too. A little mini game. It's not a game, but it's just like testing your memory. William Nylander. Changing his number from number 29 to number 88.
Why?
No idea. Just saw the headline on Twitter and ran with it.
Maybe he just wants to be his own player at this point because his father wore 92. He wore 29 because it was a flip of it.
His
brother wears 92. Maybe he kind of wants to just be William Nylander and not worry about his family as part of it at this point. Maybe he's just changing the number because he was butt last year.
That could be it as well.
Who knows? Maybe superstitions like, I was terrible last year, time for a jersey change.
Could
you imagine being that superstitious of like you have a bad year? Then you change your jersey number, and then you have a good year. But then you have another bad year, so you change your jersey number again.
The one interesting thing about it is, though, if I do remember correctly, and also reading this tweet and a bit of the first few paragraphs of what had transpired, I believe I read, though, that he is going to pay for the rebranding of anybody that has his number 29.
He did just get a nice contract, mm-hmm. So I guess that's very nice of him.
So in front of me as well, I went ahead and looked up a couple of famous number 88s, and I'd like to see if you guys can name them all.
I wonder if Patrick Kane's
are we
on
going,
this list.
Yeah, just NHL?
Oh, yeah. I have five famous 88s in front of me. Well, five and a half. One of them is a...
What's the half? There's no halves.
Well, he's not 44? Really that famous, and you're probably not going to get it because he wore it for half a season last year after getting dealt from
just
the Sabres.
Just tell us who this one is, then.
Okay, fine.
Tell us who that one is.
Nate Beaulieu. Or number 88 is a Winnipeg Jet.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Oh, that's right, he did.
All right, so I have, five.
Did he play in all the games for Winnipeg?
No.
Five famous number 88s in front of me. I'll give you this much. Four active. One is retired. And since...
The retired, I know.
The retired is pretty easy.
Yeah. It's Lindros.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got four active players. And then two... Who are active, at least one I believe is active. One might be a current
free
agent.
Does William Nylander count? No. Damn.
They were both former Buffalo Sabres. I want to test your jersey knowledge.
Oof.
Huh. So let's get it out of the way. You got six.
Okay. So Lindros was the retiree.
Mm-hmm.
Kane is obviously the top guy in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Bull used the half.
Two and a half down.
All right, good. So what, we got three, four?
Four.
Four.
Hmm.
You see, here's the problem. I'm definitely going to fail at this. This is bad radio time, guys. Here we go. It involves numbers.
See how well you paid attention.
I don't.
In class.
And all four of these guys are playing right now.
I'm sure of three of them.
Okay.
Brett Burns.
Yes.
Yeah, Brett Burns, yeah.
I got first blood. Let's go. Yep. Because everyone could get Kane.
So you got two left that are definitely active, and then two of which are former Buffalo Sabres that have played for Buffalo in the last five seasons. One played in 2014, wore number 88, one in 2016.
Jamie McGinn.
You're getting smoked.
Whoa, let's go!
Jamie McGinn wore number 88 for the Buffalo Sabres in 2016.
Yes.
I forgot he wore 88.
Well, now you remember.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember that from Buffalo. Like, I just thought of Jamie, because you mentioned 2016. I'm like, Jamie McGinn.
Like, he was the first guy that came to mind, too.
That is the first name that comes to your mind when you think of the 2016 Buffalo
When you said
Buffalo
former
Sabres.
For wearing a number in the 80s, yeah,
that
it was Jamie McGinn.
That I knew weren't Kane or O'Reilly? Yeah, I feel like that's kind of fair.
Okay,
don't
that's right.
Patronize me.
I'm not patronizing
I'm
you.
I'm smoking
forgot.
Frank over here. Let's go.
I forgot I shortened the playing field by giving you his number. So
based on the current stipulations, I feel like that's not a bad thing to think of right away. Also because Jamie McGinn often wore eights.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint for one of the current players. You better make it a medium. I only have 2 minutes.
Oh, right.
Hey, ref, terrible, check your voicemail.
That,
you missed some calls.
That terrible Dunkin' Donuts
that you heard
commercial.
Every time there was a commercial
break.
Yeah,
every time there's a commercial break in the Stanley Cup
NHL
Finals. Like, David Pastrnak doesn't take penalties.
Yeah. Like, the commercial would have been more accurate if it was Brad Marchand.
Exactly.
Really would have.
Blown
it would have been so much better.
Blown up.
Two more names.
Okay.
Two more names.
Former Buffalo Sabre.
One of them played in 2014.
For the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
2014? Yes. I have to dig up a tanker?
Yes,
yeah.
You do.
Bleep.
Most recently, I can recall him playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning as of last year. Role player. Ironically, that is also the team for which the last remaining...
Hang on. It's Corey Conacher.
Frank, step up, my dog.
Tank Saber, Tampa Bay. He wore John Scott's helmet in the penalty box. Corey Conacher. Was with Tampa originally, then to Ottawa for Ben Bishop in one of the worst trades that
I've
seen.
That's right.
Well, Conacher wasn't in the NHL last year. That's why I wasn't thinking of him right away.
And then...
But he wasn't. Yeah. But you're. He was
but
with
he was
Tampa.
Tank Saber. Yes.
Yeah. But he was with Tampa. But he wasn't with the.
He
wasn't
the
on the team.
Yes. That's why
he
said,
was in the AHL.
That's why he wasn't a sure thing, as a current NHLer. Put all the pieces together. I'm done. I quit. You got to do this last one by yourself. Go to hell.
All right. So we have Brent Burns, Patrick Kane, Eric.
Once
Lindros.
Again, you're asking also me to remember the tank teams.
Well, you don't have to anymore.
Now you're good.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Burns, Kane, Lindros,
Sabres.
Pastrnak, Beaulieu for like 20 games, Conacher, Jamie McGinn, final player here. Pressure's on you.
Yeah, and this is also the one who you don't think is active.
No, this one's definitely active.
He's definitely?
Yep.
Okay.
The one I wasn't sure was active was McGinn.
Oh, okay.
He was in Florida.
Okay.
Was he in Florida?
Yeah, let's see. Well, what era are we talking?
Like, what era? He's right now.
No, he is playing now. Okay, that's I forgot.
You're already forgetting.
Yes.
Lindros,
it's
as you recall, was the only one I was positive on that is not currently playing.
He's playing.
Yeah, I took care of the obscure one with Conacher.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
See, I don't remember player numbers. That's why I'm, not,
about
that's why I'm
that
bad
I also
at this.
I haven't gotten one wrong.
Atlantic Division.
That narrows it down.
Yeah.
I mean, it does.
It does.
Seven teams. It's not the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
Should I just brand
this which team had a notable first-round exit this year that screwed all of our Eastern Conference brackets up.
Okay, so Tampa.
There you go. I'll make it very easy for you.
Is it Vasilevsky?
Frank's on the board.
Look at that. Frank gets the goalie.
Did we get no wrong answers there?
We got no wrong answers.
I didn't think Vasilevsky wore 88. I thought he wore 80 for a sec. I don't know why.
I knew it wasn't Sergachev, for example.
No.
Because I knew
Sergachev's
it was 98. It looks close, but
yeah,
it's not.
I thought of Sergachev, too, but I didn't think
good
that
work.
Was
goalie
right.
Gets goalie.
Hey.
Look at that.
But I didn't think Vasilevsky wore
88 literally
as
left
well.
It to you for the most important part.
Sure.
See, I knew what I was doing. I was thinking about just spewing random names just to piss him off.
I would have been fine with that. Ended up being really good. Also,
we did it. Perfect run, Frank.
I learned something today.
And a good high five.
Did you guys know this? William Nylander's got a Jerome Iginla-like first name or full name.
What is it? William Iginla Nylander?
No, like it's, no, it's a really long name.
Just long-winded. There's six parts to this name.
All right, let's see. Frank, let's try to put together the dumbest William Nylander name possible. You ready?
All right, I'm going to write this down.
William... All right, hang on. We're gonna play this as
Remember,
a game.
Remember, he's Swedish, too.
No, I know. We're going to play this as a game. We're going to pass it back and forth.
Okay.
Okay?
Oh, my gosh.
So, you're going to get first up, because I'm going to say William...
Michael...
Johan...
Eric
Forsbacka.
All right.
Nylander
Carlson.
Well, you got three of the six.
Whoa.
Wait, what?
Let's go.
Right here.
Don't get ahead of yourselves. It two wasn't of them Forsbacka. Were William Nylander.
Oh. Okay, so we actually got one, which
okay,
is
we got one.
Which is even dumber. We got one out of the four.
You did.
Please tell me it's Johan.
It was Michael.
Yes.
It was his father.
Father's name.
Yeah.
That's why I was hoping it was Johan, because that would be random as all hell.
Per multiple sources that are not his official birth certificate online, he currently rocks a name and has rocked a name of William Andrew Michael Jr. Nylander Altelius.
Okay, suddenly Forsbacka is not all that far-fetched, is it?
No, it's not.
Wonder if live radio. I'm seeing if Alex Nylander has a name like this.
Oh,
good idea, actually. Ooh. But what was that last word? Artelius?
Altelius.
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 Wait, but that was the last part of the name. It was after Nylander.
Correct.
So he is William
Can't even say it.
No, I think that's his mother's maiden last name.
So what, like kind of like a hyphen sort of thing?
I think
he's William Artelius.
No, I think they're like...
No, go to hell. He's William Artelius.
Well, no, I think like
in Sweden...
And we just
traded Alex Artelius.
Yeah. Well, no, I think the way it works in Sweden is like the actual, like the father's last name goes first.
Could you imagine if William has this six-part name and Alex only has like four?
Alex has nothing.
Just like his NHL career.
Ooh.
I don't think he does. I think they just gave up. I don't think he has a middle name.
Oh, man.
No wonder he's... He doesn't have any work ethic. He wasn't. There was no thought put into his name.
Oh,
all
boy.
I'm seeing is Alex Nylander Altelius. I don't think he was given a middle
name. See, we traded an Altelius. We didn't even trade a Nylander. Suck on that, Chicago. And I think on that wonderful note, I think we should end it. Thank you.
That stinks. That really just...
Could you imagine your older brother gets all these names and then you just get...
That puts everything into perspective. It all makes sense
now. It really
does.
It really kind of makes sense now.
Except for the fact that he's going to Blackhawks development camp. Just had to throw that out there.
Wait, he is going to Black...
It was reported he's going to be...
This had to have been a Sabres thing then.
What's that?
Yeah.
They told him not to show up.
They
probably told... Like, if he's going to Blackhawks dev camp now, like I feel like that's... Either he received a message... Which I doubt, or he received a different kind of message, which was, "Hey, we're in the works of dealing you, so you don't need to show up to dev camp."
Yeah, that makes more sense.
That probably makes more sense, but it doesn't make as much sense as his brother getting six part name and he doesn't.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Let's start a GoFundMe. Let's raise some money for the awareness.
All right. One of the names for him will be
petition.
Hang
a
on.
Petition
Hang
for
on.
Alex.
Guys,
Nylander
guys, guys. Here we go.
Officially
here
change.
We go. Here we go.
His birthing name.
We are going to help Alex Nylander get his new name right now. Kyle, start it off and kick it to me.
Devlin.
Alex Devlin Powell.
I was not expecting you to say that. Esquire.
Damn. Gave an Esquire.
Jeez.
Michael Nylander.
Altelius.
Altelius. There we go. We did it. We didn't write this one down.
No.
I already forgot it. All I know is I threw the word Powell in there.
I'm honored, honestly.
Yeah, no, right? There it is. Sign a petition. Get Alex Nylander a new name.
So it wasn't his fault.
All right. I think this is a good way to end this. Right here. Creating names.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Leftovers Podcast here on WGR550.com. I am Derek Richard Hitmonlee Esquire Kramer.
Now we're giving ourselves names?
I mean, it's a bit at this point. Why not? Fine, let's do it normally here. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
And Kyle Powell.
There you go.
And, noted name share of Alex Nylander.
Noted name share of Alex Nylander. Thanks to Brian Koziel dropping in studio with us. It was a lot of fun talking some hockey, baseball, and the Open as well. Make sure to tune in to Cheetah Green on Saturday mornings all throughout the golf season here, throughout the summer. Jeff, Kevin, and Brian, they always do a good job providing even some tips for people that want to learn how to play better golf. So always be tuned to that. Thanks to Brian. And hey, training camp is on the way, fellas. Be ready for it. Maybe even do a show at 9:30? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Thanks for listening. Check it out.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.